Sorry, singing during the break. I was all up in that museum of me, honey, because, you know, I love a museum of me. And it's very cool. AllMyFaves.com is where I found that each and every week. I'm telling you. All right. Who am I? I am Carell. Is it Sunday? Oh, my God. Our weekend together is done. We don't have enough time. We don't. We just don't have enough time. Fear not. I do a gig Monday through Friday. You're welcome to find it. It's out there. My website has all the info. The Carell Show. T-H-E-K-R-E-L Show. You and I need more time, though. We need more time. All right. I get a lot of pitches. Every day, my inbox is full with publicists galore pitching this, pitching that. I say no to most of them because they don't interest me. However, I said yes to this one based on nothing more than one line. I'm going to be honest with you. I said yes to this interview based on one line in the press release. One line. I don't have a clue what the book is about. I don't have a clue about the author. All I know is this one line made me want to talk to this woman, and I told Brian to get her on the show. And what was that one line, you might ask? She raised her daughter in a Northern California funeral home and fiercely struggled to stay afloat. A single mother raising a daughter in a Northern California funeral home, I have to talk to. So I'm very lucky to be able to. She does have a novel out, and we will talk about that. It's Rebecca Fisher. Thank you for joining us, Rebecca.
Thank you for having me on.
And I know you're also doing an appearance in the Bay Area, so of course we'll get to that. But I will say it was the line that said, a Northern California funeral home where you raised a daughter. I saw that, and I said, I have to talk to this woman, because that's one of the most bizarre things I've ever heard. So first of all, Rebecca, you are an English major. You were a single mother. You did live in a mortuary in Northern California and raise your daughter. How did you end up there?
Well, my story and the character in the book story, they coincide.
Yes, give me the title of the book. You've written a novel, and the name of the novel is?
All the Wrong Places.
All the Wrong Places. And much like me, because I just finished on my second book, my first one was held through a publisher. This one I'm doing myself. I don't know if you're doing it yourself, but much like me, you're available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble online, at your website. It's available paperback and ebook format.
Right.
So you can get a traditional book or you can get it on an ebook download. So that means tonight, if you like what you hear, tonight you can actually go and buy the book at Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble or any of those places. It's called All the Wrong Places. Rebecca Fisher is the author, and I'm sure that we'll put a link somewhere. Now, so your character is very much like you. So back to how you ended up in a funeral home.
Well, the way I ended up in a funeral home is a bit different than my character, but I actually got married quite young.
How young?
I was 19 when I got pregnant, and we got married at 20, and he decided that he wanted to be a mortician. And he got offered a job in Northern California, just outside of San Francisco, just south of San Francisco, actually. And we moved into the apartment right off of the hallway of the mortuary.
Oh, dear God, no. You lived at the mortuary. Well, I guess it was peaceful, I suppose.
You'd think, but not really. Not really peaceful. It was haunting.
Was it really? Why so? How so?
Experience. Well,
really?
You know, the only time I had ever been to a mortuary was when my great-grandmother had died, and I was pretty young at the time, so... It's not a place that most people want to go, other than...
Yeah, someone in the chat room right now, Rebecca, they just asked. My chat room, by the way, is interactive. They can chat in at The Carell Show, THEKRELShow.com. They said, could she smell the embalming fluid?
I could. As soon as you walk in there, you kind of get this strange combination of smells between flowers and chemicals, and it's really a nauseating smell.
Now, I understand that you lived there with your baby daddy, but something must have gone awry because you then were a young single mother. So
yes.
What happened?
Well, that didn't last very long. We ended up moving back down south into another apartment complex next to a mortuary. and a few months after that,
you just could not get away from dead people, could you? Did you watch 6 Feet Under?
Did you
sit in your mortuary and watch 6 Feet Under?
No, I know that was a big show at the time, but I could not watch it because it was so close to home, and I was living the real thing. And so it was, I just couldn't bring myself to watch that show, but I heard it was really great. So I will have to watch it at some point.
It is well written. So how you moved back to Southern California and?
And we split up shortly after that. And so I was on my own with my daughter for quite a while.
And I understand there was a trauma about the divorce and the custody.
Oh, well, it's very traumatic. When two people can't get along and figure things out, you kind of put your life in the hands of one person. And that's pretty terrifying. And things had gotten pretty abusive and scary at the end there.
What did you do with that? Why did you then want to take and put this into a fictionalized? I mean, you've lived in a. Your story is interesting enough. Why would you fictionalize it? I mean, my God, you move into a mortuary south of San Francisco. The relationship goes sour. You move south with him and then break up. There's a bitter custody battle, which so many of my listeners, I'm sure I have a lot of women that listen, and so many can relate to some. Part of this story, an abusive relationship. Obviously, you have recovered. Why make it a fictional book? It sounds like your own personal story is so very interesting.
It really is interesting. I like to quote one of my favorite authors. Her name's Anne Lamott. She lives up your way. And she talks about how, your story is yours to tell and you need to tell it, but fiction is a great way to do that. She talks a lot about how her nonfiction really affected her relationships, and I have relationships that I want to protect and for many different reasons, and so fiction allowed me to write everything without naming names and, naming places and kind of detach a little bit from it while telling my story in a way that's just as effective.
Now, tell me about the book now, because I really just wanted to interview because of you. I was so intrigued in the story about how you came to raise your daughter in a mortuary. What did your daughter, but how old was your daughter in this mortuary? I mean, tell me she didn't sit around and play with embalming tools.
No, I brought her home 3 days after she was born to the mortuary. She learned how to crawl there, walk there, talk there. She has no memories of this. We did leave before she was even 2 years old, so she has no memories of this. Although I was going to drive her by when we're up there this week and just show her where she spent the first year or so of her life.
If she's old enough, she might slap you.
She may.
One of the quotes in your press release is about your pursuit of self-discovery, independence, love, and faith are all lived out in your book. So before we take a break and when we come back, I'll tell people where they can go and see you in the Bay Area. What is the gist of the book? What's the synopsis?
Well, this character basically walks through all of my experiences, like you just mentioned, leaving an abusive marriage and then walking through a difficult divorce and custody battle and trying to rediscover herself and her life and what she's going to do. And all of this takes place in a mortuary. She literally crash lands into a mortuary and ironically finds new life there.
You don't hear a lot of women writing fictional novels about women empowerment. I mean, you don't. I follow literature, and there's, they'll write, the romance novel, or they'll write, or they'll be totally nonfiction and write, powerful things there.
Right.
But you don't really find women writing fictional characters that are like about finding new love and new. It's very, I mean, no offense, but it's very Lifetime. This would make a great Lifetime movie. I could see some, Susan Lucci living in a mortuary. I could see it. Judith Light, perhaps. Who would you have play you? Truth be told.
Geez.
If Lifetime bought all the wrong places and they wanted to make it into a Lifetime movie, who would you want to play the lead character?
Oh, boy. Hey, I'll do it.
I hear you. All right, Rebecca Fisher is my guest. The website is RebeccaFisherBooks.com. The book is All the Wrong Places. It's about a female character, a strong woman character, single mother, going through a bitter divorce, bitter custody. This is not often talked about in books and novels, these custody battles and bitter divorces. But the character goes through one while living in a mortuary and then finds new life. booked her specifically because I know a lot of women listen to the show. I know there's not a lot of books out there that are written in this fashion for you. And it's set, but you know that her life story was really right near San Francisco. And so I thought, hey, it's even local. Before we go to a break, when are you in the area? You're in the Bay Area, right?
Right. I am coming up this week.
And are you doing a personal appearance or...?
I think we're still working with you on something like that. I'm doing
okay. I never know what's going on with me, honey. Trust me. That's why there's people, Brian and everybody else. So, yeah. All right, we will continue right after this. 8080810-8080810-415510. And, of course, texting 415-390-5288. I am Crow. We'll be back right after this. Show. I am Carell. So glad you are joining me. Rebecca Fisher is my guest, author of All the Wrong Places, about a single mom who goes through divorce and all of that that it brings, a bitter custody battle, all while landing in the middle of a mortuary, and how she actually rebuilds her life. You can check the webpage, thecarellshow.com, and her website, RebeccaFisherBooks.com, for Bay Area appearances. Rebecca, did you self-publish or did you go around searching for a publisher?
I self-published.
I asked because I got a couple text questions at 415-390-5288 from three people that asked me to mention more about self-publishing. And I did want to touch on that a little because I'm just doing it for the first time. I've had publishers before, but this time I decided to just do it myself because the publisher didn't really do much and the royalty checks were always cut in half and I just didn't like it. Plus, I'm a graphic artist and I felt I could figure it out. I think that you and then myself, when my book Shouting at Windmills comes out, are proof that nowadays, if you have a story to tell, there is a way to get it out there.
I agree. It's not easy. But it's doable, and it puts the control in your hands. And
what was the hardest part for you? Because the way that I did it, I went to a company, a place called CreateSpace, which services Amazon.com and a few other places. And I did, you know, they rejected my files like 30 times because the gutter was wrong or their bleed wasn't right or whatever. There was just, of course, they would have done it for me for a handy $400. But,
right. You
know, I mean, who has that? So I spent, you know, and they give you the templates in Word and other things or InDesign. I did it in InDesign. And so you sort of format it and then you have to get it through their gatekeepers. And there are a lot of steps in there that you might not, you know, like getting an ISBN number and, you know, all those different things. But when you finally saw the proof, wasn't that just extremely gratifying?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. When it's right there ready to print, it's really exciting. All that hard work pays off. I actually started my own publishing company.
Yeah, the upfront costs aren't that much, really, when you do it this way. And since a lot of people are doing ebooks now, you know, that's just the way to do it. For people download it to their Kindle or to their iPads. I know that yours is available electronically as well, correct?
Right.
Now, we have some questions for you at 8080810. Mike in Los Gatos, welcome to The Carell Show. You're on with Carell and Rebecca Fisher, author of All the Wrong Places.
Yes, I enjoy your program. I'll take my answer off the air. When you worked in a mortuary, did it bring you closer to the spiritual world, and do you believe in life after death, and did anything strange happen while you worked there? And thank you very much. You have a great program.
Thanks, Mike. So, Rebecca, did this make you more spiritual? And if so, how? Or did you, you know, have anything weird? I swear to God, I would have bolted my door dead. I know it's stupid, but I'm telling you, I've seen one too many zombie movie. So did anything weird happen while you were there?
Oh, plenty. And thanks, Mike, for the questions. Those are good questions. You know, it took me a while before I worked up the courage to step outside of my door. But once I did and went into the embalming room and saw the bodies, it's very evident that something is missing. And
yeah.
So that really started me questioning if something's missing, where did it go? You know?
Right.
because they're very different. It's really just a body.
I've always told people, do you believe that now? Let me ask you, because you've seen dead bodies and so have I. My mother died right in front of me and my husband, and plus with the AIDS era and all that, I've seen a lot of actually, you know, people who had either just died or died right in front of me. And television never gets it right. They can't, no matter what makeup they put on the person, no matter what, they just can't get it right, because you're right. No matter what, that person is just a made-up living person, made up to look dead. And when you're dead, there is such a distinct look around the mouth, around the eyes. It's a look that cannot be replicated.
I agree. You're right. When you watch that on TV, I kind of chuckle to myself, because they do their best, but you cannot recreate that. You're right.
So what are some of the strange things that happened?
And
do you use these with your character in the book? Does she encounter some of your strange things?
Oh, yeah. I put all my experiences. She gets to go through all of that. So I won't give away all of them, but I will tell you that one of the first experiences I had was walking down this long hallway, and there was a large Victorian-style mirror at the end of this hallway. So you're watching yourself walk through the hallway, and there was clearly a light kind of floating behind me. No body or anything, but this light kind of moving around behind me. You know, my hair standing on end, and I just walked quickly right back into my apartment, shut the door. Another time I was in the garage where they keep the hearse and the van that picks up the bodies, and I was helping dust those off, and clear as day, a shadow walked right past me, behind me, and I saw it in the car, and, you know, ran out of there full speed. Just things you can't describe. Even inside the apartment, I would hear a casket slam shut, and we would try to prop it open. There was no reason for it to keep slamming shut, but it would keep slamming shut, as if the lady in there didn't want it open, you know?
Right. Close that!
Yeah, exactly.
Now, we only have about a minute, but what are some of the things that you learned, and thus your character learns? What did you learn from writing the book, mainly about yourself? Once you finished the book and you put your fictional character through a lot of the stuff that you had gone through and thus relived some of the pain. I know when I was typing, some tears were falling. So, you know, once you did that, what did you learn about yourself?
Wow, I learned to give myself a little more credit. I was in survival mode at the time, but I really did have a lot of courage to walk through a lot of that, and I did come out a lot stronger. And more than anything, I learned that we can't really predict what life's going to throw at us. And, you know, I ended up finding a new kind of family and friends and love and a place, you know, in a time that I would have never imagined. So
in a funeral home!
Yeah, I learned to be open to what life throws my way, you know, because I know so little. I'm kind of walking through life looking through a straw hole thinking I know it all.
Well,
but
if anyone wants to read about the adventures in the funeral home, All the Wrong Places is available right now as a digital download. You can go to RebeccaFisherBooks.com, Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. And get it. It's called All the Wrong Places. Rebecca Fisher is the author. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right. I am Carell. KGO is the place to turn to for news. And for that, we go to Liz Adams in the KGO newsroom. Okay, so I wanted to have some fun this last half hour. Now, we can do one of two things, because it's the last half hour. What are we going to do, solve world peace, talk about Anthony Weiner more? No. We're going to do one of two things. Either we're going to do the Ask the K, which went over so well last week, I can't even tell you. So you ask me any question you want, like you'd ask Dr. Phil or Dr. Laura or whomever. This one guy, he said, honey, I love my wife. I adore my wife, but she has gotten so large. She is like, you know, 200 plus pounds now, and she's only 4'8". How do I tell her that this is just, you know, out of control? And she doesn't work, and she just lays around. What can I do? I mean, I don't want to leave her, but it's getting to a point. Well, I texted or emailed him back about how he's got to make it about her and not about the fat. That he can't go to her and say, you're just a big fat blob. No, he's got to make it about her health, about her well-being. He's got to participate in her weight loss. He has to eat better himself. Instead of bitching about her sitting around, he's got to help get her up and get her moving, get her out at events, get her going, get her walking, get bicycles, you know, find things to do together that burn calories, honey. and get involved. Don't just complain about it. Get involved and make it about her and her health and make it about her looking good and feeling her best. Do not make it about the fat. And if you do that, you'll see a positive change. And if you don't and she completely refuses, then you might have to leave her. Well, honey, he emailed me back and said the advice was working. So the first thing, if you want in this last half hour, we only got 20 minutes. So you got to get your call in now at 415 or 510 or whatever, 8080810, 8080810. I will solve your crisis. I will answer the questions burning in your mind. Okay, 415 or 510, 8080810. You can even text them safely to 415-390-5288. Ask the K. The K will tell you. I will tell you. So that's the first thing that we can do this half hour. If you want, you just ask the K. If as many of you ask on the phone right now as emailed me last week after the segment, it'll go for 2 hours. So 415 or 510-8080810. The other thing is, totally unscripted and unprompted, and I know there's world news out there that we could do. I know that. But, you know, talking about the funeral home, in fact, I'm making world news, by the way. My Huffington Post article is just burning it up. It's people are just reading it and commenting, and it's really something. That's about Anthony Weiner, but we've talked about him enough. Thinking about the nursing home or and the funeral home with my guest Rebecca Fisher, the question about did anything weird ever happen? It made me think, haven't we all had something weird happen? I mean, I'm an atheist and all of that, but still, haven't we all had something weird happen? Like where you're just like, that's weird. So I'd like to hear your weird. We had one that happened after Andrew died. And people did not think I was crazy and just obsessing over Andrew because they saw it happen with their very eyes. Andrew and I have this clock. It's a millennium clock from the year 2000. Now, we were in Ireland and we were on our way back and we'd already gone through security and everything. And here was this clock. Well, Andrew buys it because he collected clocks. It's solid brass. It's a four-pillar, like Roman building. Like it's four pillars and then this top. It's all brass, dark copper. I'm sorry, it's dark. It's dark metal. Heavy, heavy, heavy. And there's a lion on top that's built into the structure, and that's where the clock is. And then the opening down below of the four pillars is a big pendulum that swings back and forth. And the clock's about 8 inches tall. It's about 6 to 8 inches wide. Heavy, solid metal. Comes in a giant wooden case that takes two people to carry. And the lady that sold it to him told him he could use it, he could carry it on the plane. So we lug this thing down the jetway, only to be stopped at the door of the plane with this woman looking at us like, you are on crack if you think you're taking that wooden chest on board this plane. So Andrew, of course, didn't want to check his fabulous four. It was 353 pounds, this clock. We were making good money back then. That's like $700. Okay, so after Andrew died, the pendulum stopped. It just wasn't working. The clock worked, but the pendulum didn't swing. One day when I was having like a real fit, and missing him and screaming at the painting that Karen did of him and just yelling and screaming how unfair it all is and I just miss you and I, you know, all this stuff, the pendulum started swinging on the clock. It just started swinging. And right in front of my eyes. And I freaked out a little, but I thought, well, it's probably just the battery or whatever, whatever. So I went and replaced the battery and everything. And then I came back out and the pendulum had stopped. Now, when I was crying and screaming, I need you, I miss you, pendulum swinging. So I tell my friend Karen and a few others about this. And they, of course, just think I'm reading into it. I'm missing Andrew, all that sort of thing. So it's New Year's Eve, and we're all here at the house. And it's the first year after Andrew's gone. And they came over to make sure I didn't slip my wrist or kill myself or whatever. And we're having a small party. And we toast Andrew, and it's in this painting that Karen did of him in the backyard, and we toast him right at midnight. And right at midnight when we toasted him, the pendulum started swinging right in front of all of us. Just started swinging back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And everybody looked at me and then looked at each other. And of course, we all had a million reasons. So the air conditioning came on, or a truck went by, or the electronics inside, or whatever. But it started swinging. And as in like a half hour, 45 minutes after the toast and after everyone went about their business, it stopped. Now, you know, I used to cry. That clock is in my bathroom now, and it still does the same things. Whenever I'm just feeling that I need someone, when I'm thinking I'm just out, that I'm done, let them take the house, let Wells Fargo win. I'm tired of the phone calls. You know, I'll get by on, you know, forget the Monday through Friday show. It's too hard and blah, blah. I'll look, and the clock will be working. Well, it always works, but the pendulum will be swinging. Now, what is that? It's a malfunctioning clock. That's all it is. But I'd like to believe it's something else. And I think we all do. So, do you have one of those? What's your story? Do you have a story? You know, did a door slam? Did you see something in a mirror? Did you hear someone's voice once? Did something happen in a dream and then it happened the next day? You know, what's that eerie story that you, because we all have one, no matter how much you say you don't believe in the supernatural or you don't believe in God or you don't, no matter how much, you still have one of those stories. I heard someone's voice or something told me not to, you know, blah, blah, blah. I didn't buy the plane ticket. I want to hear your story. 8080810, because that living in a mortuary, you know stuff would happen. You'd hear stuff, you'd see stuff, even if it wasn't there. You know you would, because your body is expecting to, your mind's expecting to. So you would just would. You know, we went to one of the most haunted places in America for a Halloween show when we were on KFI. And it's a theater in Los Angeles on Hollywood Boulevard that's not open to the public. And we went in the projection room, and they say the projectionist is allegedly in the projection room. And we went in there, and I swear to God, when we stood in the middle of the room, it suddenly just got icy cold. Just like ice cold, like shiver cold. We were live on the radio, too, and I was freaking out. I'm like, it's cold. And then it just warmed up. It just warmed up. It got icy cold, and the hair stood on your edge, and you just felt uneasy, and then it just warmed up. Now, was it a trick? They say no. I don't know. Was it the projectionist? Was that the icy cold that I felt? You all have a story, so I want to hear it. 8080810, 8080810, 415 or 510. And, of course, you're texting them to 415-390-5288. I am Carell. We'll be back right after this to hear your stories. Overdue goodbye. That's the actual song that I, you know, back when I was on KGO before, we always played Overdue Goodbye as I would go off, and it's just Anastacia saying goodbye. And people would always say, what's that song? What's that? See, that's the actual song. It is the Carell Show. I am Carell, because things have changed around here, baby. By the way, Roy Precious from allmyfaves.com, the owner, founder, just sent me up through text free, as you know that I'm using text free now. For free, that's the 415-390-5288. That's text free. And if you want to send photos, it's imcarell@textfree.us. He just sent me sunrise in Israel, where he's at. A beautiful, beautiful photograph. It's really cool. It's really wonderful, which is really wonderful. Anyway, so weird stories. I'm getting tons via text. We'll get to those, but also the board is full, of course. But before we do, I want to go to, because I had said ask Dr. K, or ask the K, and since I love doing this, and I'll do it each week, I'll go to Joni first in San Jose, because she has a question for the K. So we're going to get a sounder and everything, but you can go ahead and ask the K, Joni.
Okay, thank you.
Well, here you go. Ask me. I'm here. Ask me.
Hi, Dr. K.
Not a doctor.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
I have a daughter that is 18. She is estranged from her father, and she's just graduated from high school, and now all of her father's family is crawling out of the woodwork. How does she say goodbye without hurting people's feelings?
When you mean how does she say goodbye to her father's in his family, his in-laws?
Yes.
Why does she want to? Well, why does she want to?
It's a very dysfunctional family.
Okay, so they're toxic, in other words.
Yes, very.
Oh, okay, because I feel that you can never have too much family. So if she has an opportunity to have a good relationship with a member of her father's family, even though her father may not be in her life, sometimes a toxic person can bring in other good things.
The whole family has been sort of toxic.
Okay, so if that is the case,
for a number of years, and has had no contact with her for probably 15 years.
If that is the case, Joni, then what you have to tell your daughter is, I'm sure what you already tell her, that you know what, the only thing you can do in situations like this, no matter how painful, is tell the truth. Because if you do anything other than that, it will lead to something bad down the line. So what you do very candidly right up front is say, you know what, it's great that you're my family, and I'm sure that's wonderful, but I really don't feel it right now, and maybe at a later point in my life I will, but right now I'm not feeling it. So how about you guys just give me the space I need to maybe one day feel it, and let's put this on a don't call us, we'll call you sort of basis. And if that hurts, I'm sorry, and it may not always be this way. I may one day decide I want this family or that I want to be involved in your lives. But right now, I'm 18, my plate is full, and quite frankly, I don't have the time or the energy. So let's just leave this as it is, and I'll call you guys when I'm ready to have a relationship with you.
That's awesome. Thank you.
I mean, because wouldn't that be the best thing from the get-go? But don't tell them it'll never happen. Don't say, look, because she's 18, you don't know what's going to happen when you're 30 or 40 or 50, and you don't know what people they might turn into. Maybe some of them won't be train wrecks forever. People do. So all you can tell her to do is do what you always have to do. I had another friend. He had an ex-girlfriend, right? And his neighbor down below, who is also his friend, befriended the ex-girlfriend. And the neighbor says to him, now this ain't going to bother you, is it, that your ex is down here in my apartment? Well, being a nice person and not wanting to step on any toes, he goes, no, it's fine. And of course, every time she was down there with his friends laughing it up and he was upstairs alone, his anger built and built and built. Finally, what happened? It turned into a big mess between all of them. Why? Because from the get-go, no matter how uncomfortable it might have made his friend, he didn't say to him, I'm sorry, but guess what? It is going to bother me, so we need to do something about this. She needs to tell them right now that, you know what, at this moment, I don't have room for this relationship. However, one day that may change, but please let me be the one to reach out, and please respect my request. And I think no matter who they are, I think they'll respect the honesty. And if they don't, then she just has don't answer the phone, don't reply to the emails, don't look at the defriend them on Facebook and send the message.
Thanks, Carell. I appreciate that.
Thank you. See, I am good at this. All right, let's go to Barbara in Monterey about strange stories.
Hi there. And yes, you are good at that.
I'm good at it. I am.
Well, first of all, I had the premonition of my husband's passing. Like you, I lost mine in 2000. So every time you talk about Andrew, I just so relate on so many levels. But I was coming back from a swim meet with my daughter, and he was supposed to join us, and he didn't. And I had the weirdest feeling. And as I was driving, taking the exit into Monterey, I envisioned me, at the time we had just separated, and I envisioned myself finding him dead.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turns out, as we pulled into my house, I had a neighbor and a best friend here, and the lights were on. I'm like, what's going on? Well, they came out and they got the news and, of course, escorted me out and told me while my two young children, weren't going to hear it. But after that, for, I think about 5 years, I woke up between 3:18 and 3:22 every night, like bolt straight up.
Every May 21st, I wake up at 6:18. That's when Andrew died.
Wow.
I just wake up no matter what.
That's
at 6:18, every May 21st,
yeah.
I wake
up. Yeah, well, every night I did it, but the thing is, my husband died on April 15th, and I also have those strange things on the anniversary, but the coroner had said that's when that he had passed away.
Right.
So it's just weird. Just weird. But, you know,
it is weird. See, we all have these weird stories, Barbara. We do. And thank you for calling with yours. And you can catch me tomorrow in Monterey, you know, from 3 to 6. Roger, welcome.
How are you, Carl?
Roger.
I sure like your show.
Thank you. I like doing it.
Like a lot of people, I've had the experience of kind of knowing when somebody was phoning me, even though I hadn't heard in months from the person.
Mm-hmm.
But
premonition, precognition.
Yeah. Well, I only had one precognition dream in my life. It's a very kind of odd one. I am an earth scientist, but I really didn't know much about landslides or anything detailed about them. So I was really very surprised when I had this dream. I guess it was very early one morning. That I was in a home in the area where I live, which is Hercules, and it was very slowly sliding downhill, you know, just maybe inches in an hour, real slow. But I thought it was really weird, you know, just a strange dream.
Now tell me, did Hercules slide down a hill?
No.
Okay.
So what happened was, later that morning, maybe it was 9 o'clock, I get this totally unexpected call. And it was a man living in Crockett, which is not far, and he said, I'd like to have you come and look at my house foundations. I think maybe we're very slowly sliding down the hill. They were on a steep hillside above Crockett.
Wow. And so you actually dreamed up some business. Roger, we got to hurry, but thank you. Dave and Julian, I love Julian. The Julian with the apple pies, welcome.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I haven't talked about this for a while.
You've got 20 seconds to do it now, so go.
All right. Okay, I was lost in the mountains for 8 days, and the last day out I said, I don't promise to go to church, God, but get me out of this, right? I said, I'll listen more. And I heard this voice say, cross the stream, and I crossed the stream, and it was flat, and I found a sheriff found me. You know, so.
Are you blind?
Yes, uh-huh.
You were lost for 8 days?
Yes, sir.
And yep. You heard a voice that say, cross the stream, and you did, and you were found?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Dude, you're calling back next week. That ain't fair. I am Carell. Thank you.